I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. Mel Hertig joins me now, the legendary Edmonton bookseller, publisher, and creator of the Canadian Encyclopedia, political activist and author, has written a new book, The Truth About Canada, Some Important, Some Astonishing, and Some Truly Appalling Things All Canadians Should Know About Our Country. Mr. Hertig takes world statistics on healthcare, poverty, taxation, corporate profits, and more, and looks at how Canada really measures up. The results are often astonishing and sometimes shocking. Has Canada changed for the worse? Are we no longer the people we think we are? Peter C. Newman calls the book Hertig's magnum opus. Mel Hertig is the author of Pay the Rent or Feed the Kids, The Vanishing Country, and Rushing to Armageddon. He is an officer of the Order of Canada and joins me now from here in Vancouver, where he currently resides. The Truth About Canada is published by McClelland & Stewart and retails for $34.99. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Mel Hertig. Good morning, Mr. Hertig.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
How long have you lived in Vancouver?
3 years now. I've got three and a half daughters out here, and they've been trying to get me to move out here for 20 years, and I finally succumbed.
Did you like living in Vancouver?
Oh, I like it a lot. I'm enjoying it a tremendous amount. I love the beaches. I love the greenery. I love the restaurants. So I'm very happy here. And it's great to see my daughters and my grandchildren more often than when I lived in Edmonton.
How long did it take you to write this book?
Well, the research was about 3 years, and the writing about three-quarters of a year.
You seem to have done a great deal of research.
Yeah, I have many faults, but I'm a very good researcher, and when I don't know the answer to things, I know where to look for them, and I actually enjoy researching a great deal. I enjoy having an idea and reading something in the papers and saying that's nonsense, and then going out to prove that it is nonsense. And that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, because one of the first things I do in the morning is go to Statistics Canada Daily. It's on, as the name implies, Monday to Friday, 5 days a week, and I read it, and then quite often the next morning in the press I read about that release, but a totally different cast on things from the one I got when I read it originally. And while this happened more often and more often, I got really tired of it and said, well, let's put together a book of real facts about what the truth is about what's going on in the country. And it's vastly different than much of the propaganda you get from our extremely right-wing think tanks like the Fraser Institute or the C.D. Howe Institute, etc. And the irony of it, Joe, is that the press, the print press, tends to accept these press releases from these right-wing think tanks as if they're gospel, and they put them on the front page, or they put them on the front page of the business section, etc., without spending any time checking out the facts in these press releases. And so the Canadian public gets very badly misled quite often.
Do you think it's indicative of the heavy concentration there is in the media, or is it, do you think, the agenda of the proprietors of these newspapers, the media outlets themselves?
Well, it's both of them. I've got a chapter in my book on the media. I don't know if you've seen that chapter. But it's one of the strongest chapters in the book, and interestingly enough, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives asked as a favor if they could reprint one of the chapters in the book, and I said, sure. And I thought they'd pick the free trade agreement or competitiveness or productivity or something like that. They picked the chapter on the media. Canada has the highest degree of corporate concentration in the media of any major democracy in the world. And it's almost all owned by people who are not just conservatives, but by people who are very far right on the conservative spectrum. You know, a good balance would be some left, some center, some middle of the road, some conservative. But when you get most of the media owned by people who are very, very, like people like Conrad Black or the Asper family, for example, you then have a problem where you're going to end up, well, let me just explain quickly. Conrad Black will hire a of ownership in the media. And you've got a mortgage to pay, and you've got kids to send to school or to university. You don't want to be put in a position where you're going to get fired because you might not get another job. And so it presents a huge problem with the dissemination of balanced information.
So some people say, though, that this is reflective of Canadian values, that the Canadians are becoming more, I would say, right-wing. Is that that's not your contention at all?
Well, it's not accurate to say that. Has Canada been moving a bit to the right? Absolutely. Lawrence Martin, who's a wonderful journalist from the Globe and Mail, who was fired by the Aspers, by the way, a few years back, says, you know, you can change the complexion of a country by controlling its media. And there's no question that since the Aspers and Conrad Black took over the southern newspapers, and with the emergence of others in the media, there's no question that there has been a shift somewhat to the right. But by and large, the public opinion polls show that Canada is as it always has been, and that is a center-left country.
Has there been a clamor from the public, as you've seen it, to sort of do away or to I guess, not have the media as concentrated?
Well, you know, years ago there was the Davy Royal Commission on the media, and it warned against concentration in the media and convergence where the press people are allowed to own television stations as well. I mean, Vancouver is amazing. All the papers are owned by one company, and that same company has, what, 70.6% of the television audience. Same thing is true in Saskatchewan, same thing is true in New Brunswick. Most democratic countries would not allow that degree of convergence and concentration of ownership. After the Davy Royal Commission warned about this, or maybe before, the Kent Commission warned about the same thing, and just a couple of years ago, there was a splendid, I'm a big critic of the Senate, I'd abolish it tomorrow morning, but they came out with a wonderful report about media concentration. And by the way, do you think the press reported this? Well, maybe on the back page, but no, there's been lots of warnings about this and comparisons with other countries to show how poorly we do, and yet there has not been much of a concentration because a complaint because when's the last time you heard a politician in the Harper government or the Martin government before them, for example, stand up and complain about media concentration? They don't do it because they're afraid if they do, the media is going to make them pay for it.
But back to my original question about the public wanting greater diversity in the media, I guess. Did you find that they're probably not paying attention, that they're, in terms of politics itself, are they participating in politics, or are they just apathetic, or they find other things to worry themselves with?
Well, are they participating in politics? One of the best chapters in my book is about the democratic system in Canada. And it shows that are you ready for this? We're 109th in our turnouts in federal elections compared to other democracies around the world. Can you imagine that? 109th?
Mm-hmm.
Only, let's see, in the last federal election, 2006, I guess it was, the number of people who made a donation to any political party was, are you ready for this? Less than 1%. I think it was 0.075%. And there are many other similar examples. Look at Stelmach just made this huge victory in Alberta, and the press described it as a landslide. Well, 22% of eligible voters voted for Stelmach. And one of the reasons for this, by the way, is our ridiculous first-past-the-post electoral system, where people reach the point sometimes. And, well, look, the Green Party last time had, I think it was 675,000 votes and elected no one, and the Bloc had, with 675,000 votes, elected about 20 members of Parliament. So people are frustrated by the system. They say, what's the use of going out and voting then my vote is going to be worthless.
As a British Columbian resident now, you've seen the, I guess, what was that, a few years ago, the last provincial election, the referendum.
Yeah, the single transferable vote debate.
Right. Now, it's gone to a vote. People did not endorse it.
Oh, but it was so close. I mean, you know, it was the way the rules were framed, it was very, very close to matching the government's desire to have a certain threshold. And I have a sneaking suspicion that it's going to pass this time. But just for whatever it's worth, my opinion is that a mixed member proportional system would be infinitely better than the STB. Ipsos Reid did a poll right after the last provincial election, and about 75% of people said they did not understand the STB and how it works. Well, you know, if the provincial government had done a better job of selling it and explaining to people why they wanted it to go ahead, then it would have passed. And that's a problem that we face. I wish we had an alternative of a mixed member proportional representation system that is, in fact, used by about 85 different nations around the world. And we'd have a much better parliament, much fairer, much more representative. And here's the key thing. It would be much more representative of the will of the people.
In the book you discuss, the role of women in our society. Have we done well as a nation in terms of having females in business and politics and so on?
You know, I wish I could remember the figure, but I think we're 36 in terms of the number of women in our House of Commons compared to other countries. Compared to women on boards of directors, we're just a pale shadow of what exists in the Scandinavian countries, in Norway and in Finland and in Sweden and in Denmark. On the other hand, women have made some gradual moves. All you have to do is go to universities these days and look at the overwhelming majority of women that they're taking law compared to men, or medicine, or in many other faculties. So there has been some movement for women, but we're still behind the times and where we should be.
In the preface of the book, you write that Canada has changed very much for the worse under the governments of Mulroney, Chrétien, Martin, and Harper. Mel, what did these governments do to the unmaking of Canada as you see it?
Well, I don't know where to begin. You know, are you happy that you live in a country that is 54th in the world in the number of doctors per 100,000 population? You know, Cuba has 591 doctors per 100,000 population. Canada has got 214. Are you happy about the fact that we're 22nd in the world in terms of poverty? 21 other countries. And by the way, bear in mind when I give you these numbers that in 2007, Canada was the ninth largest GDP in the world. Okay, where are we? 22nd in poverty. When you've got a lot of poverty, obviously you got to do some social spending. We're 25th out of 30 OECD nations in social spending. We have a higher number of low-pay jobs than most European Union countries. In unemployment insurance, we're down to, at one time, in 1980, 86% of Canadians who were unemployed got unemployment insurance. Now it's under 30%. Well, I could go on and on and on. As a matter of fact, I will go on tomorrow night. I hope some of you, your listeners, will come to the Alice McKay room tomorrow night at the Vancouver Public Library, where I'll be talking about these things, about my book, and about and signing some books. And, you know, one more example. Peacekeeping, we're down to 36th in the world in peacekeeping. Productivity, we're 47th out of 50 countries in productivity, and I could go on and on.
Were you shocked in the midst of writing this book at what you'd uncovered?
Well, you're going to be surprised by my answer. You bet I was shocked. I knew I was going to come up with some stuff because I'd had little notes about certain things, but I couldn't believe how the stuff that I came up with so contradicted the stuff that you get from the C.D. Howe Foundation and from the Conference Board of Canada and the Fraser Institute, etc. It was astonishing to me. I'll just give you one more statistic that I'm going to speak about tomorrow night publicly for the very first time, and you tell me what you think about this. In terms of public expenditures on education in Canada, as a percentage of all government spending, Canada is now 91st in the world. Now, everybody knows the world is becoming a more competitive place all the time, and we've got to ramp up our educational systems and do a better job and produce more PhDs, etc., and we're 91st in educational spending, which is totally absurd. We, in the book, you'll find there's a place, I can't remember the exact number. Yeah, I can't. In a recent 5-year period, 12-year period, we had 222,000 new students in our universities. 222,000. Take a guess as to how many new faculty we added.
I couldn't guess.
2,000.
Really?
You know, absurd. Totally absurd. So, we've got problems like this, and we've got to solve these problems. If we don't solve these problems, our standard of living is going to drop. And if we keep going the way we've been going, in terms of allowing our country to be taken over by non-residents, and our petroleum companies to be bought up, and our energy companies to be bought up, and our retail companies to be bought up, you know, what exactly is going to be left for your kids?
How do we solve these problems, though? Who do we look to help us?
There's only one way you can solve it. I mean, it would be really nice if we thought about all these things and said, oh, well, there's easy ways to solve it. There's no easy way to solve it, except when 80% of Canadians have never belonged to any political party. You're looking at the source of the problem. When fewer than 1% make a donation to any political party, you're looking at another source of the problem. If you want to have democracy, then people have got to go out and get directly involved in the democratic system. Look, the Suzuki Foundation is wonderful. The Sierra Club is wonderful. The Council of Canadians is wonderful, etc., etc. People want change. They better go and join a political party and get active in that party.
Did you see much leadership from the leaders themselves?
That's very funny. Dion is obviously, whatever the antonym for the word charisma is, Dion has got it. And the leadership that Stephen Harper is providing is taking us into a balkanized, fractionalized country with a very, very weak central government that will make it impossible to have strong national programs in the future. And Jack Layton is a nice man, he's very articulate, etc., but for some reason the NDP has not been able to catch on, and God knows we don't want the Bloc to be powerful.
Mel, this has been a fascinating chat, and it's been a fascinating book, and congratulations on it. Continued good luck with it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us today.
Bye.
The book is called The Truth About Canada, Some Important, Some Astonishing, and Some Truly Appalling Things All Canadians Should Know About Our Country, $34.99 from McClelland & Stewart. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Planta.